Milton R. and Jennifer T. Shall we flip a coin or? And Jennifer will go, will speak to us first.
Hey everybody, my name is Jennifer, I'm an addict.
Hey Jennifer.
You guys are some diehard recovering addicts to be in here tonight. With all that stuff, other stuff is going on, and you guys are in here to hear a message of recovery, and I hope I can give you one. I'm going to share with you my experience, strength, and hope. You know, sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, it takes what it takes to get us here, to get ready, you know, and it took me a while before I was ready. You know, I was introduced to this fellowship when I was like 16 or 17 years old. I got busted in high school smoking pot on school property. I'd been busted before, but this time was different. They made me go to counselors, and the counselors told me to go to meetings. They sent me to a different fellowship. And I remember going to those meetings and thinking it was a bunch of old men sitting around talking about drinking, and that was cool for them, whatever. And one night, I read the meeting schedule wrong or something. I think I was high. And I ended up in an NA meeting. And I knew I was in the wrong place, you know, from the get-go, because the people who walked in the door looked like people I had partied with from time to time. You had the hippies and the heads, and they were all hugging each other and laughing. And then I thought, oh, no, I'm in some religious cult meeting. And but then this really cute guy sat down next to me and started talking to me right away, so I stayed, you know. And it was cool. It was definitely attraction rather than promotion, you know. I don't remember much about that first NA meeting, but it was all right. They talked about drugs. And nobody cornered me and said, you know, what drugs are you on, where are you getting them from, and signed this piece of paper saying you'll be back and we're going to save your soul and stuff like that. So I did go back to meetings. I went to meetings high. I went to meetings drunk. I sat in the back. Nobody ever told me to leave. In my mind, though, I was like, I'm not a, you know, I don't have a problem with drugs. You know, I like drugs, you know, and the only problem I have with drugs is when I run out of drugs, you know, or I get caught with drugs. You know, I was sick and tired of the consequences of using drugs, but I like to get high. And I thought NA was a place you went when you didn't like the high anymore. And I was like, I'll see you later when it happens, you know. But my life at that point was all about the high. And I thought, man, I'm too young. There's too many parties yet to go to, you know. There's too many drugs yet to do. I'll be back if I ever get that bad. But I went to meetings because I thought people were watching, and some nights I just went, I don't even know why. But I sat in the back, and it was cool. Nobody ever freaked me out. And so that was like a attraction kind of thing. You know, I was doing things, though, to try to straighten out my life at that time, you know, because my life had gotten so unmanageable because of getting caught with drugs and stuff like that. I did try to change my life several times, doing other things without stopping getting high. You know, like you know, I'd change the drugs that I would do and the people that I would hang out with. You know, because I knew I had a problem, but I didn't think it was drugs. You know, I knew the problem was me, and I didn't get that message when I came to NA. You know, I didn't hear what you guys were saying. I just saw the title of the program, Narcotics Anonymous, and I said, well, that ain't me, because I like all drugs, you know. And so, you know, I just thought this place, you guys, I thought you guys were saying that if you just put down the drugs, everything's going to be all right, and your life's going to get come together and be great. And I knew that wasn't true for me, because I had stopped the drugs from time to time, a couple of days here and there, and nothing ever got better. You know, it only got worse, and I wanted to get high. But I knew I had a problem, but I thought the problem was, you know, I knew the problem was me. I thought it was like a moral problem, a moral deficiency, kind of God made me bad kind of deal. Because I come from an earth family where no addicts in my family. I have two older sisters and mom and dad. They didn't even smoke cigarettes, you know. My sisters got high a couple of times with me. It didn't stick, you know. They just kept going on their normal way of life. They might drink socially here and there, but all my life, even before I ever picked up a drug, there were some things about me that were not normal. I can see addictive behaviors way before I ever picked up a drug, like I think that my first real drug of choice was food. In elementary school, I was one of the fattest kids in elementary school. I like to chase my older sisters around with steak knives to see the look on their face, and beat them up, never take a bath, you know, wouldn't clean. And this is ever before I picked up a drug. They had padlocks on their bedroom doors to keep me from breaking in and stealing money, so I would go out and buy pro wrestling magazines and candy, you know. I mean, I was a nut. I mean, they would look at me and be like, what is wrong with you? You know, why do you do the things that you do? And I'm like, hey, you know, why aren't you doing this too? This is fun. You know, and they would look at me when I did try to tell them about how I thought or what I felt. They would look at me with this blank look on their face, like they had no understanding or clue what I was talking about, and they were a little bit scared. You know what I mean? So I learned at a young age, you know, not to tell people what I really felt or really thought, because it just freaked them out and make things worse. You know what I mean? So you tell them what they want to hear. And as I got older, I got better at doing that. But it made me feel like something was wrong with me. Like everybody else in the world seemed to have a booklet of, you know, how to function in this world and what it was about and how to be good and do right and why you would even do that. And I didn't have that information. You know, I was the kind of kid that always reacted to my feelings, and I didn't outgrow that as, you know, as a child. I continue to keep that as I grew up, you know. But at the age of 11, or, you know, I got my first real drug, which was alcohol, and I loved it, man. I'll never forget it, the way it made me feel. And I said, this is what, this feeling right here is what the rest of my life I want it to be about. You know, and I can look back now and say that that's the day I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself, which was that feeling. And I didn't know it then, but I know it now from looking back. And because I can see how from that point on, my choices and my decisions became about finding ways and means to get more. And my life slowly began, you know, the field hockey got dropped and band got dropped. And this fat little elementary school kid who likes science, learned how to talk cool and be cool, at least in my own head. And, you know, I got an identity that I really liked. I liked being the happy hippie chick to get drugs. Until I did that enough that I didn't know how to live life without getting high. In fact, I couldn't picture a life without partying. I couldn't imagine, what do you do if you don't party? You know what I mean? What do? Go bowling? Sell Tupperware? Watch Oprah? Yeah, those are the things. I was like, nah, man, it ain't happening. You know what? But I didn't see why you even wanted to quit. You know what I mean? There was a lot of confusion in me, though, and then I didn't feel connected with anybody. No matter how high I got, no matter what drugs I did, I still felt alone in a group of people, even people that I thought were my friends. Nobody knew me. Because I thought if you possibly knew me, you would run screaming too and get away from this fat nerd. You know what I mean? It's crazy. But I did try different things to change the way that I felt. I changed the way I dressed and who I hung out with. I changed different drugs. I only drink, or I only do this on the weekends. I don't do this during the week. You know, and no matter what I did, the feeling always stayed. You know, the faces would change, but the feelings would always be the same. But I didn't know another way. You know, it's all the thing I could come up with was change the things outside of me, because I didn't have any power to change the things within me. That was hopeless. I mean, you can't do that. No matter how much I faked it, because believe me, I would fake it, it never stuck and it never worked. And I always ended up doing what I wanted to do anyway, which was get high and take what I want and react to things and make my life unmanageable, you know, by doing whatever I wanted to do. And, you know, I even went to the church route. You know, I used to get high with a girl that her mom used to make her go to church, and it was a holy roller kind of church. It was a lot of fun, and to go there, you know, and watch the people, you know, dancing and getting saved, and they would go up to the front of the room, and they would say, you know, I was once an asshole, and God touched me. And I'm not anymore. Right? And I would be in the back going, yeah, man, that's what I need, you know. I need to get touched. And but I would never go up there because I was too afraid. You know, I didn't want to stop smoking cigarettes or stop having sex, you know what I mean? So I wouldn't go up there. But but I admired those people who did, you know, because I seen it working, man. And then one night, you know, the drugs was going, I was sick. And I ended up at the church by myself with the people, you know, without my friend. I'm sitting in the back all sick, and the preacher man's going, you know, come on up. I'm talking to you. And I knew he was talking to me, you know. So I went up to the front of the room and stood there, you know, and I was like, all right, God, here I am, hit me. You know, I really believed and felt that this lightning rod was going to come out of the sky and zap me good. You know, and I stood up there, and the people came out of the audience and prayed with me and all kinds of stuff, man. And I stood up there for 20 minutes, man, and nothing ever happened, you know. And but I refused to sit back down, you know. It was like, it took me all this to get up here. But no, when I left that church and I was leaving, going to my car, you know, I thought, why did I think anything was going to be different in that room full of people, man, the altar and stuff, when I've said the same things on my knees in my bedroom to God many times by myself, and nothing ever happened then either. You know, I remember saying, please, God, you know, change me, man. Just do whatever you got to do. I'll do it, you know. Nothing ever happened then either. But it's kind of like showing you my progression of my desperation, of being sick and tired. And like I said, I was already sick and tired of the consequences, but I wasn't sick and tired of being the sick and tired of being me. You know, that's where I needed to be. And I didn't know that, you know. It was like, so at that time I was introduced to the meetings, and I'm going to meetings, and I saw this dude that was, you know, H&I this and chair that, and he was all involved, and I could tell he liked me, you know, so I hooked up with him and went to meetings with him every night for a while. And just by not hanging around old people places and things and going to meetings every night and hanging out with people, I got like 30 days clean. And I got involved in service and started reading the literature. I did everything, you know, you guys suggested to do, join a home group, all that stuff, but I wouldn't work a step with a chick, you know. I said, I'm smart enough, you know, I can read this stuff. I can read this stuff and think about it enough, and if I pray about it and write about it and think about it and talk about it, I'll change myself, you know? And even though you guys said that's not how it works, I thought, well, I'm different, you know, and it'll work. And, you know, they said, Jennifer, you know, if you can't think your way into a new way of thinking, you just think you can. You know, it's still you doing the thinking, you know. You know, you can't put a book of knowledge in there and think you're going to think yourself into a new way of thinking. Just think about that, you know. Anyway, but that's what I thought, because I'm insane, right? And so my life's getting a little better, you know, because I'm clean. I'm showing up. I'm smelling better, you know. People are trusting me, and my life, outside life, is getting a little better, but I'm still sick inside. Nothing inside is changing. You know, I'm still the self-centered, self-seeking, self-indulgent, self-hating person that I was. I'm just clean, man. And so it only took 4 months, you know, and then when the Grateful Dead came into town, when they left, I went with them, you know, and that was the end of that. And I remember thinking and saying, well, that NA stuff, you know, it doesn't work. And, you know, so I used, and I relapsed, and I had relapsed a lot, you know, if you consider them relapses, but this last relapse lasted a while. And, you know, things that you guys said came back to me. I was in the meetings, and when I wasn't looking, somebody planted a seed in my head, and with every drink and every toke, that seed grew into this great big bush I couldn't get away from. And I mean, if there's any other relapsers in here, I'm sure they can tell you, you know, your high is blown, you know, once you relapse. You never get high innocently again. There's always the voice, you know, in the back of your head going, look at you. You are sick. What are you doing? And you just gotta get high more, right, to shut the voice up. So it's like the disease is progressing. And you guys told me, you know, it's only gonna get worse. If you're an addict, it never gets better. It only gets worse. And the only ends for an addict is jail, mental institutions, and death. And I never, you guys said that, but I never saw that in myself. you know. And then one night when I was relapsing, you know, I was driving around with these guys, and I'd run out of drugs, and I'd run out of money like 1,000 times before. And, you know, it was like going down the road, I was thinking about all the different things that, you know, all the new things that I would have to do to get more. I burned so many bridges, man. The line in the sand, you know, was way over here. Like, I remember the line in the sand in the beginning was, you know, when I was drinking and smoking pot with my cousin out in the cornfield that first time, you know, there was a line in the sand, and it was, I'm not going to snort anything, you know, ever, right? And then the first time, it was offered to me for free, because it's for free, man. You got to try it, right? You know, I did it, and I loved it, and the line in the sand was here. And I'll never do trips, man. You know, that was my line in the sand. If you do 7 trips, you know, you're considered legally insane in the state of Delaware. You know, your babies are going to come out wacky, you know, and I would be on my soapbox. That was my line, you know, in the sand. And then the first time it was offered to me for free, I did it, and I loved it. And the line in the sand was over here. I'll never shoot up. You know, I'm afraid of needles. And the first time it was offered to me, I said, you do it. You know, and I had all these lines in the sand. I'll never steal for it. I'll never lie for it. I'll never prostitute myself for it. I'll never, you know, I'll never. And then what I realized that night in the car all of a sudden was that my lines in the sand were so far out there that the only ends was jail, mental institutions, and death. You know, the results of my last lines. And why I was thinking it wasn't going to happen to me, I don't know. But that day I had a moment of clarity because you guys planted a seed. And it freaked me out, man. And but I didn't stop using that night. I just thought about it a lot. And then, you know, you're thinking about, oh, shoot, man, please God, you know. And then it was like a couple nights later or something. I was alone in my where I used a lot at the end was home alone in my bedroom. And, you know, I'd be by myself. And I remember I had a bed and a dresser with a mirror. And I had this little black and white television set. We didn't have cable. So I would get high with, like, the Thundercats and the Three Stooges. And I would get high and drunk by myself. And I would sit at that dresser and with this mirror, and I would cry. I hated that room, man. I hated being alone in that room. And but it was better than going out of that room and looking into the face of my family, you know, and or not knowing where I was going to end up. And one night I was in that room, and you know, crying, I wasn't saying anything, but, you know, if I was to say something, it would be like looking in that mirror and just saying, you know, I hate you. You know, I hate this life. And why me? And I wanted to die. I was too afraid to die, and I was too afraid to live. And it was a hopeless state. And one night I was in there, and there was a basic text from when I'd been in the meetings before. And I picked it up and read Who is an Addict? And I'd read that book 100 times, and for the first time, though, ever, I read the black part, the words. And I'll never forget it, man. You know, it's like it took me using all my relapses to get me to the point where I was beaten. And once I was beaten, then I became willing. And when I read myself in the Who is an Addict, and then I got the true understanding of what we're recovering from here is addiction, not drugs, but the disease of addiction. And I could go on and on about the differences and what the disease of addiction truly is. And what makes addicts one of a kind is not the drugs, but it's the feelings that we have. The isolation, degradation, loss of control, distrust of others, embarrassment, guilt, shame. It's all the results of this disease. I didn't know that. And these are things that all that I was. You know, by recognizing that, finally getting that message, and recognizing that I'm an addict, it set me free to try this program for real and come back and do it the way you guys said to do it. And once I did that, I was truly set free from this disease, a day at a time. You know what I mean? I have 18 years clean now. I'm still working it, you know what I mean? And I've been sick and tired. Of being sick and tired, clean, you know, because we're powerless over this disease, and it doesn't go away just because you get clean. But recovery still needs to be worked, because I'm still powerless. And if you find the results of this disease of addiction in your life clean, you can still practice the same things you did in the beginning. Surrender. Have an open mind of what God's really trying to show you, you know, a different way. And surrender to this program. The same things that worked in the beginning can work at any stage in your recovery. You can show, you can start your recovery and your life over at any time, on any day that you're hurting. You know, never give hope, lose hope in that. The change is possible no matter where you're at in recovery. And it might mean a whole new total change. But my time is up. But thank you guys for listening. Have a great convention.
My name is Milton. I'm an addict. I thank God for this process, man. And I have no idea why they asked me to come and share. But I'm here just to share my experience, strength, and hope. Not to preach, not to teach. Just my experience, strength, and hope. Sick and tired of being tired. You know, it's funny. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I wasn't tired of using. I'm just talking about Milton. Matter of fact, before I got to Narcotics Anonymous, they used to call me Ray Ray. And pretty much Ray Ray did what he wanted to do. My last day of using was March 27, 1995. And I skin popped. Because I was determined I was going to use. And I used in my mother's bathroom. That was the place I said I would never, ever, ever go to use. But I couldn't wait to get cross town. You know, my disease said, no, no, no. We're not driving. We're not going no further than right here. And we're going to do what we got to do. I'm going to give you enough post-nasal drip. I'm going to give you enough diarrhea, muscle cramps. I'm going to take you to your knees until you work with me first. Because that's how my disease is. My disease comes first. It don't wait on nobody. It don't care who you are, what your value is. It comes first. And it was amazing because, you know, I'm so smart, I never went to treatment. I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Because it was a spiritual awakening for me. I was having a baby. I was 39 years old. I don't know what all that meant. But I guess God had touched me and told me, we're going to do something different. So I said, okay. And I thought about this child, and I was obsessed with the idea that here's another child coming. You know, what am I going to do? And I got to thinking about Ray Ray. You know, this cat, man, he has never broken the pattern. You know, our liturgy talks about, we know we're not perfectly bad and we're not perfectly good. Well, my mom's is a good woman, and there's only 16 years between us. But my pops is a career criminal. My mom's was a maid, he was a criminal. And I was thinking, well, I'm 39 years old. I played both parts. So I guess what it was, I was really getting sick and tired of me, you know. I got sick and tired of what the liturgy talk about living a Jekyll and Hyde life, you know, being that honest businessman during the day and being that crook at night, you know. But it was something about this baby coming, something about this baby coming. Now, I seen the frying pan commercials. I seen some of you guys wearing the emblem, you know what I mean? I heard something about it. But I, too, I went to the other fellowship because I wasn't an addict. So I went there, and I stayed in the back. I remember my first meeting. I had a baseball cap that I brought the brim down real low. I wore a turtleneck, and I brought it up real high. And I said, well, I just hang out for a minute. And, again, you know, it was a spiritual awakening, and I heard something. I heard something that touched me. I heard somebody say something like, you don't never have to live like this anymore. And I'm like, what? You don't never have to live like this anymore. Because, you know, what I realized, man, for me at this time, that I really, I've had children prior to this boy, but I hadn't really been the man I wanted to be. I could have been a better man, you know what I mean? But I realized at this point in my life, I wasn't the man I wanted to be. So I said, okay, I'm going to go to another meeting. Then I decided I'm going to come to another meeting. And, you know, y'all got tired of me sitting in the back. Y'all got tired of me gritting on y'all, you know, because I'm a tough guy, you know. And I had that look in my face that if you say something to me, I'm going to kill you. And I'm going to kill your whole family. Because that's how my disease rolls, you know. It's very isolated. It's very standoffish, because that's where I come from. You know what I mean? And, you know, I guess y'all was, like, laughing at me, right? Because this one brother stepped to me, and he was like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm all right. How you doing? He said, oh, yeah, I've been seeing you coming to meetings. You got a sponsor? I said, no, I don't really need one of them right now. But I'm all right, though, you know. And he said, well, let me introduce you to somebody. And he introduced me to this old-timer. Now, every time I seen this old-timer, he kept this book, this literature, clinging to him. You know, now, if I remember how it was back in the country, it was almost like he was one of those Bible-carrying guys. And he just, and every time I noticed when people would talk to him, he would always pull that book out, break it open, and start reading stuff to these people, right? I said, oh, man, this cat coming over here to preach to me, you know? And he didn't preach to me. He just said, how you doing, young man? I said, I'm cool. He said, okay, all right. He said, well, you know, you too can have this full joyous life. I said, oh, wow, man. I ain't never heard this con before. You know, this sounds real sweet. So they kind of like said no more to me. They left me alone. And I thought that was cool, so I kept coming back. Needless to say, that baby boy was born, and, you know, I just felt like something is terribly wrong with me because, you know, I want to do right by this boy, but and I haven't used for a couple of days, but I really don't have no goals set in place, you know what I mean? And this guy, he happened to run up on me while I was at work, and he said, meet him at this meeting because he needed to talk to me. Now, I thought it was about some money, a scam or something, you know. I said, okay, cool, we can do that. And the cat met up with me, man, and he told me that this old man wanted to talk to me. And before I knew it, I had a sponsor. And life just started changing. I found myself meeting this old man every week. I found myself coming clean, man. I started talking about me. You know, wasn't nothing real profound, you know. I was just saying that, you know what I mean, I don't know what the fuck I want to do. You know, I got this child here. I got four others. You know what I mean? I just want to do something different. So he finally started, you know, talking to me from the literature, and he was pointing stuff out in the literature because I did have this one problem, and this is where I was really kind of like, you know, thinking about using again because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Every time I tried to get with this young lady, I was having a premature ejaculation. And I felt real, real disturbed about that because I've never had this experience before. Now, this is my story, okay? And I went to the old man and I said, can I talk to you for a minute? And she said, yeah, sure, son, what's going on? I said, look, it's kind of private, right? In other words, I was giving the signal that you can't tell nobody about this. Yeah. You know, you can't tell nobody about this. So I shared with him what was happening, right? And I thought he was going to give me some good old, you know, some good advice. He opened up the literature. And he recited something from the literature, and, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but what it said was that sex is good as long as you're doing it for the right reasons. And it made me think. I wasn't having sex for the right reason. Because sex was like dope. I just wanted to get through that moment. I didn't care about the person who I was having sex with. I just wanted some more dope. And what I realized, man, is that, you know, there was something going on. Well, needless to say, I kept coming back, and for 18 months, this old man was getting ready to pass away. He died, but he asked me I could come visit him at the nursing home, and I met some people in the meeting, and they was talking about this meeting in D.C., and it was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I said, well, what's up with this meeting y'all talking about? Oh, man, you don't want to go there, man. You really don't want to go over there. I said, you know who you talking to. What do you mean y'all want to go there? He said, man, them motherfuckers are crazy. You know, they in there, man, cussing, and they stomping their feet, turning over tables. I said, that sounds like the place I need to be. You know, for me. And I decided to go there. When I walked in the door, man, I seen a guy I haven't seen since diaper days, man. I thought he was dead because that's how we rolled. And, the old man had died, but the new one was there. And he embraced me, man, and he took me in one of these rooms, and he told these group members to have me sign in this book. He said they told me to put my name down, put my clean date. And this would be my home group from now on. Now, I ain't had no say-so. This is what they told me to do. So at the time, I believed that I was running out of bright ideas. Well, I realized that time was catching up with me, and all my behavior was catching up with me as far as being like my father. I hadn't broken those patterns, and mostly because I hadn't done any step work. And what I realized was I needed to be more closer and more attentive to my sponsor, but my sponsor told me before he died, you need to get another sponsor. But I hadn't done that. And I decided then that, well, I guess I asked one of these guys in NA to be my sponsor. And I did that, and this guy, man, you know, he wanted to start doing step work right off the break. And one of the things he asked me was, you know, get in touch with the symbol. That's where I got started from, in the basic tech. I got started from the symbol. And before I knew it, I was on the first step. And here's the thing that boggled me, that kind of like how I can relate to, how I believe to relate to getting sick and tired. He kept pushing this question, could you stop using on your own? I never could stop using. You know, I had my own detox, which was my bathroom. I could get clean for a day. I buy some Golden Seals. I get some cranberry juice. I get some spring water. You know what I mean? And that sit me for a minute. But I didn't realize that this was a feeling disease. I didn't realize that this was a even spiritual disease. And I didn't realize that the answer to my problems was in the steps. So that sponsor took me through the steps. And what I realized by going through the steps, I built a foundation of recovery, which told me to go on with the rest of the program. And what I found out was that, you know, being tired of being sick and tired is being tired of me doing the same thing for the same reasons, expecting different results. It's just that simple for me. You know, because not necessarily being in recovery, I'm going to change. I got to do the work. I had a lot of time, almost 3 years in recovery before I started changing. I was still, I never forget, I took this one lady home in recovery. I took this one young lady home for all the wrong reasons, right? Because, you know, my thing started working again. I got past the premature climax, right? And I took this young lady home, and you know what I mean? The next time we had that meeting at that meeting place, she came back, and I mean, she was stoned, right? And she was like, you know, all impaired, right? She was slurred, right? And she was coming down the hall right now. Everybody was hearing this noise. Ah, da, 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 da. And everybody was like, you know, look at it. Bam, she came past the door right now. I was like, damn. I'm trying to, like, duck right. And she said, Milton, you going to give me a ride home? Sick and tired of being sick and tired of me. You know, it just blew my whole image, right? And what I realized, again, man, you know, I was a killer on the loose in recovery, killing people, killing the women, not letting them live. You know what I mean? Because for real, you know, the newcomer is the most important person, Milton, and that includes the women. You need to leave them the fuck alone. They're not here for your pleasure. They're here to recover just like you. And it took that one sister to touch my spirit to get me to realize that I need to go on with the rest of this program, and I need to get some work. Because, see, I love my father, but my father got issues. He got a lot of issues, and I got them all. I'm just like him, you know. Same criminal behavior he practiced all his life, so did I. I refused to break the pattern. Only reason why I broke the pattern is because I came to Narcotics Anonymous. Because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired of being a criminal, lying to people, hurting people for no reason. Because, you know, when I hurt you, I really hurt me. When I lie to you, I really lie to me. You know, when I create harm on you, it's harm on me. So I get tired of that, man. I got tired of that. So I start telling people, stop calling me Ray Ray. My name is Milton. Yeah, Milton. You can go with all those little funny names. You know, I heard them all. Milton the Monster, Milton Burrow. That's cool. You know what I mean? But don't call me Ray Ray. You know, because Ray Ray's a little boy. And this program teaches us from boys to men. And that's where I want to go. That little boy I was telling you about, he's 13 years old. His birthday is today. And I had to do some things. That's why I was late getting up here, because I had to do some things with him. Because, I see him just like his father, just like his grandfather. And I'm hoping that I can be something different, that he can might find that difference earlier than waiting like me till he's almost 40 years old. So I was there for him versus being, you know, I used to think going to prison was like going on a picnic. You know, I don't want that for my children, you know. So I have to understand that being sick and tired of being sick and tired means you have to do some work, Milton. And it ain't lip service. You got to do some real work. I'm hoping, man, that having a sponsor, higher power, you know, other healthy men in my life is going to make me better. But I don't know. I just had gone through a divorce. I just buried my mother 2 years ago. I had a daughter killed in 98 in this process. And all these things have kind of like signaled that I've had to change. You know, I heard somebody say it earlier, you know, recovery is hard work. But the results, man, are beautiful. You know, I was there the whole 10 months of my mother going through the cancer, going to the hospital every day. And, you know, isn't it something unfortunate and spiritual that I got fired just to be able to do that? Because I wouldn't leave that job, you know. But God saw fit to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. So I was with Mom, and I didn't miss a beat. All my bills were paid. Everything was taken care of. But what I also found out of was being sick and tired, is that the relationship I was in, I was hearing shit like, look, we know that your mother going through all this, but I need this. And that was like disturbing my spirit, right, because I thought that I was making some healthy changes, right, but I wasn't because my pickets broke. You know what I mean? And I realized that I just got to realize that I can't go around, you know, thinking I'm going to change people. Because that's how my father was. One of his occupations was changing people. especially women. You know what I mean? That was one of his occupations. What I realized is I don't have that skill he had. That shit makes me use, right? So again, God doing for me what I can't do for myself. You know, I'm in divorce court, and it's the best thing that could ever happen for me. Because again, I couldn't do it on my own. You know what I mean? And isn't it funny how I got mostly upset because somebody outlied me? Isn't that something? Outlied me. I had my network up to 3 o'clock in the morning talking about how I was going to do all this sniper shit and how I was going to hurt something and all this, right? Look, it's amazing how, you know, one act is helping another is about parallel, because this was a guy who I sponsored telling me, you need to write. How about that? You know? And I guess I got so sick and tired of being sick and tired of this guy telling me I need to write, right? Because he wouldn't let me be angry, right? I hung up the phone and started writing. And I found myself, guess what? I did not leave out the door, you know. And life has moved on, and I've gotten better. I've gotten some outside help. The people told me when they first met me, they thought they was going to have to put me in an institution because they said I was deranged, homicidal, because, again, my father had raised up in me again. His behavior raised up in me again. But I really relied on Narcotics Anonymous. I beefed up on my meetings. I just stayed in more closer contact with my network, who would not let me die. They refused to let me die. They said, "Nah, you ain't doing all that. We're going to meetings. We're going to, you know, talk about the literature." And it got me through, man. It got me through. So, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm sick and tired of my disease knowing more about me than I do. That's all. But guess what? I'm all right with it today. I really am. Because having this disease has given me the clarity as to why I stand here today. My disease lets me know I'm alive. I'm not going around no more talking about how I have this magic tool, how I'm going to get rid of my disease. Because my disease hears that shit. It hears that. And he smiles when he hears that. You know what I mean? So I'm not giving my disease no more ammunition. You know what I mean? I'm allowing my disease to be where it at. And in turn, you know, I'm going to be honest. And I'm be honest enough to say that, you know, I think the literature tells me that an attitude of indifference and intolerance towards spiritual principles will defeat me in my recovery. So I need to just go ahead with the rest of the program and just know that I'll never be well. I'll never be well. But if I keep coming back, if I keep coming back, if I keep being open and honest with you people, not worry about my image, because I'm pretty sure right now somebody's saying, he fucked up. That's okay. But you know I haven't used. So, you know. I don't know how much more I can say. I feel freer now. I do. I feel free, and I'll keep coming back.
Thank you. I want to thank Milton and Jennifer for sharing their experience.